Well, the U.S. House Committee on Agriculture last Friday afternoon released the full text of Farm Bill 2.0, which was introduced by Congressman Glenn G.T. Thompson. He's also the chair of the House Ag Committee. The bill is formally called the Farm, Food, and National Security Act of 2026, and Republicans on the House Ag Committee say they will mark up the bill this coming Monday, the 23rd. Joining us now here on Hoosier Ag Today is Ted McKinney, CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. And Ted, I'm just going to open up the floor to you to give us your thoughts in general about the bill, what you like about it, and perhaps what you don't like about it. But overall, your thoughts on Farm Bill 2.0.
Sure. Well, thanks, CJ. Well, the first thing you've got to say is hooray and hooray and hooray. Though this is not the final step by any stretch, it is an important first step. It's like anything else. One step begets the next step, begets the next step. So good for the chairman. And we love the fact that he is such a positive guy, and it's hard not to like him. And so any disagreements you're going to see are going to be almost exclusively on policy differences, not because of a disregard for the chairman. So good for him for bringing this forward and introducing it in a timely manner, you know, here in February. So we'll take that. I think as I think about your audience there in the Midwest, upper Midwest, there are a few things. The first thing is most people probably need to be reminded that the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill covered about 80% of the funding of what we've known in previous farm bills, but about 20% of the policy. So they got big stuff done for the farmers, but now we've got to go back and do the final 20% of the funding, which is very important to some producers, and 80% of the policy, and we cannot forget that. So what this does is it addresses, there's a little bit for every one of the 12 titles of the Farm Bill. So I think some big ones are in commodities. It strengthens the commodity programs that were passed in the reconciliation, and this adds a standing block grant authority for appropriated disaster funds. Now, Indiana, Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, your listening area tends not to have as much of the disaster as, say, the coasts, but just once, all it takes, and this becomes very, very important. So I think that is one that's important to very, very to farmers. And then there's also a farm storage facility loan program, always important for areas that store a lot of soy, corn, in some cases wheat and other crops. And there's an improvement in the dairy forward pricing and making that permanent. So let's start there. In terms of conservation, it includes precision ag for cost share in the very popular EQIP and CSP, or conservation stewardship programs. And that's important because regenerative agriculture is gaining popularity. And I think the Midwest, certainly Indiana's view of CSP, would be one that most people like. So I think this is good. And then there are some limits for approval and payments for the Regional Conservation Partnership Program so that we can bring that into sort of a post-COVID review. And then big time, it reauthorizes the Conservation Reserve Program that we know. On trade, I think the big beautiful bill, so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, already put a lot of money into trade promotion. That's something that we at NASDA are operating very effectively on. In your area, it would most certainly be the U.S. Soybean Export Council, the U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council, U.S. Wheat Associates on wheat trade. And oh my gosh, are they being used effectively in opening up new markets? Not enough to overnight solve the China issue, which has always been an important market, a big sucking sound for particularly soy and other products. But at least it helps. And then I just would touch on credit, which is so important these days. It reauthorizes all of the programs that expired in the 2018 Farm Bill to ensure access to credit for producers. There are other things, but I'll let you direct me to what you want to cover. Those are some highlights that I see as very important.
Well, Ted, I know that a lot of pork producers that I've spoken with have been pushing lawmakers for a legislative fix for Prop 12. And I see that as part of this legislation for Farm Bill 2.0. So I would imagine that pork producers would be ecstatic knowing that that this particular legislative fix is included in this legislation.
Yes, I think it would be. Now, just to be very clear, NASDA has no position on that. California is a very good member of ours, and we remind ourselves that our member from California did not pass this. This was the electorate in a ballot initiative that passed this. But that doesn't make what you say incorrect. It is correct. And though I think they're starting to get the pork as they have been getting poultry and they're paying a premium for it, my goodness, if you want to talk about affordability, which seems to be the theme these days, this kind of a move would be difficult. But that said, I think most people are looking more to the future. Yes, let's try to fix this for Indiana pork producers. But at the same time, if this trend continues, my goodness, are we going to have a patchwork quilt of policies of what's allowed in and what's allowed not allowed? And it could transcend hundreds of commodities. So I think the larger objective behind Prop 12 is to say there is such thing as the Commerce Clause. The Supreme Court chose to allow this. They did not rule on it. But after a while, it might grab their attention if we see this kind of work going on across all products, crops, critters, fuels, fibers, etc. And I think that's the larger one. So we'll have to see. But right now it's in. Now, let's admit, it's very controversial. The minority, the ranking member, Congresswoman Craig, who is a respected and formidable force, though initially supporting this, has changed and now is opposed to this. So we'll have to see where this thing goes. But certainly in agriculture land among farmers, I think they see and understand what, at least I understand why they're saying this is something they want to fix.
I think another thing, Ted, that that I didn't see included, and I may have overlooked this, Ted, because the bill is more than 800 pages, and that's pre-markup, because we know once it hits the markup stage, we're going to see red lines, we're going to see additions and amendments to this legislation, so it's going to grow even more. One thing that I was surprised, and I didn't see it, and maybe I overlooked this, was anything to do with reform of the H-2A ag labor laws. And that may be because you have a labor committee that deals with such issues, not necessarily an ag committee. Is that why we don't see anything of this nature addressed in the Farm Bill? Is that because that's up to the labor committee, not the ag committee, to work out farm labor reform?
Yes, your assessment of it being of labor being under another committee is largely correct. There is one more thing, and that is that they're trying, Chairman Thompson of the House Ag is trying to keep controversial issues out of this as much as possible. There are two or three that are clearly marked as controversial, but this one might just have caused for this to be unwieldy. There is movement, albeit slight, in other areas because I think the president and I think much of Congress understands that agriculture for sure, you could throw in the hotel and hospitality industry as well as a few others, are in absolute desperate need of employees. I was just reviewing an article from Texas where raids on home builders is just decimating and slowing profusely the construction of badly needed housing. So I think we will see something, but it's not going to be through the Farm Bill 2.0.
Another thing that isn't in Farm Bill 2.0, and I can kind of pivot for just one second here. I know a lot of corn producers are really pushing for year-round E15, was previously included in the appropriations bill a month ago, but got removed. And then now there's an energy task force that's been created to work with the petroleum industry and biofuels industries to kind of come up with some additional compromises there. Is that why we didn't see anything about year-round E15 in this farm bill as well?
Again, you have that correct, largely. I'll repeat what I said before, that Congressman Thompson, Chair Thompson, seeks not to put intensely divisive issues here. Now, I'll qualify. I don't think E15 passage year-round is that divisive. What we have is just one more round of sorting through how we can marry up the importance of refining oil with the importance of corn and ethanol. Now, I'll just say that Congress got an earful after this passage, after they passed on and did not include E15. Oh, my goodness, did they hear it? It was all over D.C. And I'm seeing positive signs that say this separate avenue might get there. But oh my goodness, it better get there, because there is just profuse, incredible disappointment that didn't get there. Now, a word to one of the changes that was made that affects your area. What they did in the small refinery exemption is they elevated the amount that's allowable that would exclude a small refinery, grant them reprieve. Our beloved Country Mart Co-op, as I understand it and have been told, is excluded. It's safe, in other words. So what that means is the discussion now is in that mid-range refinery size. The Petroleum Institute, very, very powerful. They're okay with E15, which is an enormous important decision on their part. And of course, farmers and national corn growers and all the biofuel groups are supportive of this E15. It's now the mid-size refinery that we're working through. And oh, I'm hitting my knees twice every day, not just once, to pray that goes through and we get approval on that. It's so important.
And finally, Ted, I'm curious what it's going to take for Farm Bill 2.0, Ted, to get signed into law. Well, pass both the House and Senate, get to President Trump's desk, and get signed before the fiscal year ends on September 30th.
Now, that's the $64 million, not $64,000 question. And I'll offer these thoughts. First of all, we're going to have to see how the markup process goes and what eventually does pass the House. I'll hope that will happen, but something's got to pass the House. And they have to keep an eye on what the Senate will be able to move through as well. Hence the discussion on what might be seen as more controversial items. I think there is a lot of goodwill for the farmer, and I think D's and R's alike want to get something through. But it's going to have to be safe. That's why it's a revenue neutral. This should appease the Freedom Caucus, who are very conservative and rightfully so, watching budget expenditures. So I think that's one thing. But at the same time, oh my gosh, these are not easy these days. The margin is so very, very tight in the House. And then, of course, in the Senate, on this one, it will not just be a majority. It will require 60 senators. So to answer your question, I hope farmers are writing or calling their members of Congress. If they don't, shame on them. I'm saying that out of love and respect. But I know farmers, they say, let your actions speak for you, not your words. This is the time they better be voicing up, because if it's a tepid response, those who are opposed can say, well, I just didn't hear from my farmers. I know and can suspect that most farmers are not on social media. Well, this would be the time to get on social media, because this administration, a bit like last two administrations, are focused very much on what they see and hear on social media. So if it takes some of our older friends like me to get their grandchildren or their children to teach them how to get on X, or other means, because that's what they're watching and that's the metrics they're reading. This is the time for farmers to get active. And my gosh, of course they've got to work through their commodity group or their farm bureau. But it's clear to us that although the commodity groups, NASDA, Farm Bureau, all have a very important voice, this administration and this Congress are looking well beyond what the CEO of NASDA or Farm Bureau or soy, corn, beef, pork, poultry is saying. They want to hear directly from that farmer. And I cannot emphasize that enough. If you're uncomfortable, get somebody that knows it and is comfortable and get on it, because we need to get this done. I think it can work.
Once again, Ted McKinney, CEO of NASDA. Ted, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.